Hello and welcome to the Awakening Podcast Series, and I'm your host, Seamus. And for some of you, I'm going to be a rather familiar voice. A lot of you probably know of me from the Drum Gab podcast that I created, and I interviewed many, many drummers all over the world, and I had created 100 episodes. I did that within a two-year span. So some of you who are listening to this will know me from that, and then there will be some of you who have never heard my voice before. So I welcome you to this podcast series, and thank you so much for tuning in. With everything that I've created podcast-wise, this is by far the most important work that I've stumbled across so far and have completed. And I couldn't have done it with a better person than Ned Burwell, who is the author of the book Be Love, a book about awakening, which is what this series is based on. We actually took a deep dive into his book and found lots of questions within each chapter and spent a lot of time examining the text and just allowing our curiosity to find every little question that we may have had about the book. And this was just an amazing collaboration. I just have to say, I normally don't collaborate with other people too often. I like to work alone usually, but in this situation, I couldn't have done it without Ned. So thank you so much, Ned, for everything, man. I really have a deep gratitude for you. And the fact that you wrote the book for everyone to experience, including myself. If anything, I feel like him and I have made some kind of guide that at least I can look at because I think I really needed it. A little bit of backstory as to how I know Ned and a little bit about myself. I have had a lot of issues in the past with trying to maintain happiness. Now, I could also go as far to say a stable reality with my emotions and how my mind tends to race and just wander off into some pretty dark places. And that's been a big part of my life experience. A lot of my life experience day to day has been struggling to keep a good feeling. And that is this thing that I've been chasing for many, many years of my life. And usually ends up in a lot of frustration, a lot of skepticism, a lot of, oh, I thought that might have been the thing. And fortunately, Be Love, when I read that book, everything I was reading was clicking with me. I felt as if it was written for me, which is something that, it's funny, this is something that Ned gets a lot of feedback about, that a lot of people feel that way. I'm not the only one. This is something that a lot of people have said to Ned, that his book feels like it was written for them. And that's because what happens when you read it is you start relating to your own life experiences within the text. And it's not so much Ned trying to convince you of something. He's just presenting stuff that is common in life. And a lot of it is relayed through Ned's own personal experience. How I know Ned. So my wife, Amanda, and I, we own a flower shop here in Ingersoll, Ontario. And Ned and Lisa, his wife, they own Endless Boundaries Tattoo. Now, when we first moved to Ingersoll and up until a couple of years ago, Endless Boundaries Tattoo was located in Ingersoll, Ontario, just down the street from my wife and I's flower shop. And we were looking for an apartment, and it had to be affordable, had to be close to the shop. And it just so happens that Ned and Lisa were putting up the apartment for rent above their tattoo shop. So we went and checked it out, loved the place, suited us, suited our budget. Ned and Lisa seemed like great people. And so that was that. So we lived above there for a couple of years. And over that two-year span, we really got to know Ned and Lisa. Not like the depth that I know them now, though. I mean, this project has created such a strong bond between us. Like, I always felt like Ned had answers to the things I needed in my life. That's what I've always felt Ned was to me. So it's no wonder that we ended up working together on a project like this. But in any case, there would be times where I'd have these very difficult moments during the day. It would have even included having an argument with Amanda because, you know, the state of my mental and emotions, it wasn't good. And every time I went downstairs to talk to Ned, I remember one time in particular, it was a terrible snowstorm. It might have been January. Something like that. It was in the wintertime, and all the shops were closed that day because of the snowstorm. And I went down there and I talked to Ned for almost 2 hours. And when I left, I went back upstairs and I was in this really happy state. And prior to that, I was in a miserable state. I woke up in the worst mood and I was confrontational and angry and just not good for anybody. But Ned has an energy that he can pour into whatever's in front of him. He just has that ability and that gift to just radiate so much warmth and positive energy. So I always felt very comfortable and secure around him, I suppose, for that, but also felt insecure around him. And I admitted this to him, actually, just during this process of making this project with him, that I felt like he could see through me. I sort of avoided Ned a little bit because of that, because I just felt like he could see all of my flaws, because I felt like he was so in tune with whatever was in front of him. He could see what that really was. And so I wasn't very proud of that. But fast forward a few years later, and, you know, I'm into this podcasting thing, and I know what Ned's doing. He's doing all kinds of public speaking and stuff for his You Matter blog, and he's all invested in the mental health. Him and I actually did collaborate on a charity event together as well. And one day I sent Ned a message out of the blue, and I said, Ned, you should start a podcast. I think you have a lot of great things to say. I think you have the perfect voice to deliver that message to people. And I also feel that it would be really well received. So, I mean, I'm more than happy to help you with that, help you set it up and get it going. And I would love to do that for you. And he says, oh, you know, I don't have a lot of time. I'm kind of busy. I have lots of tattoos, the You Matter blog and everything else that he has on the go. You know, and it kind of, and I was like, man, that's sort of a missed opportunity though, because, you know, what it's such a great way to get a message out is to broadcast it over the internet. But then it would be 2 or 3 months later, and out comes Be Love, a book about awakening. And I saw it on Facebook, I think, and instantly it just dropped into my mind, I need to get that book. So I'm literally in the Independent here in Ingersoll, and I call up Ned, and the reception's really bad in the grocery store. And I says, hey, Ned, man, I can't find the book. Like, where's the books? He's on his way to Manitoulin Island with his family. And I thought he was saying the chip aisle. So I'm like going down to where the chips are, and I'm looking around and I'm trying to find his book. I'm like, Ned, I don't see it in the chip aisle. But what he was actually saying was the checkout aisle. It just sounded like chip aisle with the bad reception. So I picked up the book and I read it really, really quickly. And I mean, I have to preface by saying too that I hadn't read a book since I was a kid up until that point. Actually, no, that's not true. The last book I'd read before that might have been like 8 years. But in any case, I'm not a reader. So in any case, I read this book in less than a week. I just crush through it. And before I'm even halfway through the book, I says to Ned, Ned, we got to do something with this. We got to make an interview or something. And that's all it was supposed to be in the beginning, was just a single interview, maybe two interviews. But certainly not the 15-part series it would turn into. He agreed to it, and I don't really think that him or I really gave it a lot of thought. I think we just kind of leapt in blindly and just went for it because it felt right. If like I was just on a wave, and so was he, because he had just written this book, and he was radiating from that, and people were really digging into it, and he's getting tons of feedback. And I think he really saw the value in producing this into, you know, a secondary piece of work, something to complement his book. So away we go. We start prepping. We start figuring this thing out. The amount of prep that went into this was extraordinary. I mean, I usually do a lot of prep for my normal interviews, which, again, I was doing during the same time as making this with him. But this was on a whole other level, like examining it word for word, sentence for sentence, and finding the questions that lied within it. And what we explored in our dialogue is some of the most impactful stuff that I've ever heard. And for me, like, if I was just to look at this selfishly, I feel like now we've made something I can use for the rest of my life, which I know I need. I need that. And for anybody out there who feels like they need, like, when you wake up and you feel down and you don't know why, and all you want to do is keep that happy thing going and it ain't happening, like, that's how I used to be, then this is for you. And the thing is, too, is I trust Ned so much, and he demonstrates everything that's in this book in real life. When you meet Ned, and whoever knows Ned knows that there is no questioning that man's holiness. There is no questioning his good heart, you know, and his positive spirit. You just can't. You cannot, you know, and that in itself made me feel comfortable that with what he wrote would be a benefit to me, because I'm looking at the effect that this has had on him, and I want that. So I really hope that you guys enjoy this series. This is just an incredible thing. I absolutely love it. Ned loves it. We're super proud of it. This is not meant to hypnotize you into something that you need to believe or anything like that. I think the best way to do this is to approach it willing and being open and just listen and listen deeply. There's a part in this where, you know, later on where Ned explains a certain technique to absorb this content. And once you get to that part, if you're still with us, then you're with us for the rest of the ride, guaranteed. So just have an open mind, an open heart, really take in the words, digest them slowly, and try to relate to your own life through what we're talking about. And I really do hope that you truly enjoy this series that we have put together for you.
I've been through a few different things. When I was in my early 20s, I had reached a point where my anger had come to a boil, and you know, it was just one of the most frustrating periods of my life. But there was this other thing that was going on too, and that was that I had made all the checks on my list for the things, the achievements that I wanted to do in this life. I had by my early 20s, I had a home, a vacation property. I owned a vehicle. I was married. My house was full of things that I didn't want or need, but yet I was still angry and I still wasn't happy. And for up until that point, my happiness was dependent on the next check mark on my list. So I thought when I was younger, when I get a car, I'll be happy. When I have a car. Mm-hmm. But the thing about placing our happiness into a future event and into an object is that the object and the future event can't produce what we're looking for. What we're truly looking for is to be at peace. So, you know, for instance, if you were to buy a car, the first time you drive down the road with that thing, you know, you would feel really good. The first time you drive your new car, mm-hmm. and you may be at peace in that moment, but within a few days or a week, you're not feeling the same way about the car. And in a couple months, you know, the car really is just another thing in your life. What created any amount of peace in that moment is that you just let go and you were actually sunk right into the moment. So this is something that this experience was coming up for me. I'd make a check mark on my checklist for life, you know, buy a house, get married, have a vacation property, like all these things, own a Harley Davidson. And yet there was no happiness. And it actually drove me into depression. I became very depressed because what else is there to life? I made all the big checks mm-hmm. by 20. And thank goodness for me that it played out like that. I almost think it was supposed to, because it was my job in this life to wake up. I needed to wake up so that I could wake other people up. And when other people wake up, it wakes me up further. And that's sort of how it works. So I had this experience where on one of my darkest days, the depression had came to visit and just wrapped itself around me so tightly that I felt like I was suicidal. And in that moment, I distinctly remember crying out to God. Now, I'm not a religious person. And at that time in my life, I wasn't spiritual. I wasn't anything. I was just, I was a 20-year-old guy tattooing, engulfed in my ego. You know, it was just life. It was a different scenario for me. But in that moment, I cried out to God. I needed help, and I didn't know where to turn. So within a couple days after making that plea to God, I need help, please help me, my phone rang, and it was a local doctor. And this doctor in town, he was a chiropractor. He had been sending nice messages back from his clients. You know, tell your tattoo guy he did a nice job on that tattoo. And So for months, there was a little bit of a setup. For months, he was sending comments to me. So when he called, I wasn't overly surprised to hear him calling about a tattoo. He wanted to get his nephew tattooed. So we set a time. He brought his nephew in and we started tattooing. But the day he shows up for the tattoo, it just is the funniest thing. He shows up and he had drank maybe 3 pots of coffee. So he's bouncing all over my tattoo room and he's touching shit and just being a total weirdo. And so I start tattooing his nephew, as we had did a phone consult and I had the artwork ready. So I start tattooing his nephew, and then he's reaching in with bare hands and rubbing homeopathic ointment on his nephew's tattoo. And I'm like, what are you doing? You can't touch my client while I'm tattooing them. And yeah. Like with your bare hands, you're a doctor. You should know better. There's body fluids. And so I'm shaking my head. I'm like, who is this guy? Is this guy really a doctor? I don't think he is.
Yeah, right.
So then throughout the tattoo, he was smoking cigars and drinking. He had brought a thermos of coffee with him. But at the end of the session, he said, we had determined that it'd take about 2 or 3 sits to complete his nephew's tattoo. Mm-hmm. So he said, the next time I come in, I want your last session of the day. I'm like, okay, why? And he says, well, I want you to come back to my house for some drinks after you tattoo my nephew next. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, this should be interesting. I'd like to maybe get into your psychology a little bit, because he was a bit of a weirdo, but there was a certain allure about him. There's something that drew me into agreeing to that. So as promised, the next time we got together after the tattoo, I'm sitting in the doctor's kitchen, and he's got your typical doctor house, a beautiful house, and we're having a beer, and he looks at his nephew and he says, go get the room ready. Now, I don't know about you, but that's a little strange.
Yeah, that'd raise some flags.
Get the room ready. And so my mind is racing. I'm thinking to myself, the room, where's the room? What do you mean? Get it ready. What's there to get ready? You know, all these thoughts are coursing through my mind, and I'm thinking, but I just suddenly go, you know, I'm a redneck. If he tries anything, I'll make his nose touch his ear. Yeah. So I just kind of went with it. So about 15 minutes later, his nephew comes back and he's like, the room's ready. And so again, I'm like, wow, that was a long time. So he and the doctor and his nephew lead me into the living room, and he points at the door and he's got kind of a grin on his face, and he says, you first.
Like telling you to go in first.
Yeah. He's like, you first.
Okay. That wouldn't make you uncomfortable, would it?
That's weird. Yeah. Well, that sort of prefaced my whole friendship with the doctor. It was a very strange occurrence, but a very deep one. So, but back to the story, I say, whatever. I open up the door and all I could see was a glow of black lights. And I look, it's down into the basement. I look down the stairs. There's lava lamps, records, and CDs, and solar systems hanging off the ceiling. It was a hippie psychedelic room.
Right.
So I go down and I'm looking around. I'm like, okay, this guy's harmless. He's messing with me. So that night, he and I got rip-roaring drunk. But at the climax of the evening, he had made his way across the room while talking at me violently, not violently, but he was talking at me. And then, but at the climax of the evening, he's poking me in the chest and he's yelling, in my face, are you ready to die for what you believe in? And I'm like, I push him off me. I said, what is wrong with you? Mm-hmm. You're on glue. Like, and he starts laughing. He finds this wildly amusing that, you know, he sort of pushed my buttons a little bit. So I push him off me. I say, you're a weirdo. And then we both start laughing hysterically. And shortly thereafter, the night concludes. Now, where this story kind of goes a little bit dark again is about a week or so later, a couple weeks later, I'm alone and I'm with my thoughts, and I'm there's like, just feels like a dark cloud has come back over me, and I'm again feeling suicidal. I'd reached a point in my life where I wasn't happy, and I wanted to find something that was going to make me feel complete. I wanted to know my purpose, and there was just all these things that just were not working for me. So I decided to get on my motorcycle and go for a ride. And I jump on my bike and I'm driving around the Cami plant, and I'm thinking to myself, there's a brick wall at the end of the road. I'm just going to drive my bike right into that thing. So I speed up and I'm flying at this wall. And in that moment, the doctor's words just poured into my mind. He had something.
Mm-hmm.
He had something for me. He said things to me that night in the hippie psychedelic room. He said things that kind of I didn't understand. He was talking about duality, that we're androgynous. And he was talking about the nature of my soul and my spirit. All kinds of things that I knew nothing about. And in that moment, while I was speeding towards that brick wall, I knew the doctor had something for me. And I knew what I had to do. It wasn't like I thought about what I needed to do. I just, in my heart of hearts, I knew what I had to do. I had to go to his house. So I turned, instead of hitting the brick wall, I turned the corner and drove straight to 20 Ridge Road. And I was on his porch, and I remember standing there for a moment. It was such a compromised position for me. I was 20 years old. I'm a tattoo guy. I felt like I was extra cool. And here I am crying on this man's porch, feeling like I'm not worth anything. And it's maybe the world would be better without me. And I really did think the world would be a better place without me. But my soul and my heart knew, push the button. Ring the doorbell. And I did. I rung the doorbell, and the doctor came to the door. Luckily, he was home. But I didn't get the response I was looking for. He looks at me and he says, what do you want? I'm like, okay, this is not the response I thought I was going to get. In that moment, I looked at him and I said, I want what you have. I don't know what's wrong with me. I need help. Will you help me? And when I look back at that in hindsight, that was the perfect words to say, you know, to open up this friendship that was going to happen with the doctor and I. So he says, yeah, I guess you better come down. You better come in. Let's talk about that. He took me back down to the hippie psychedelic room in his basement and talks me off the ledge. And then the next thing you know, he goes into this closet that's downstairs, and he motions for me to come over. And I look into the closet in the room. The closet is like a little room, and it's full of milk crates full of books. So we start shuffling through all these milk crates, and he digs out about a dozen books. And there's like a huge stack of books on the table. And he says, okay, I want you to take these books home and read them. And I'm looking at them like, at that point in my life, I'd never read an entire book. Maybe Charlotte's Web when I was in public school. Yeah. But I'm looking at this stack of books going, holy crap, that's a very large stack of books. And but he in the moment, he puts out this ultimatum. He says, if you don't read the books, don't bother coming back. Don't bother me. Mm-hmm. He says, but if you do read those books, come back and we'll talk about it and have questions. So I swooped up the big stack of books in my arms, and I as I was leaving his house, I'm thinking to myself, this is my opportunity. This is my point of awakening. This is my time. There was something about that moment of taking those books out of that man's house. Mm-hmm. Moments before, when I rung the doorbell on his porch, I was desperate. In true desperacy, and I talk about this, the whole story is in the preface of my book, but true desperacy is when nothing around you looks good, nothing ahead of you looks good, and nothing behind you looks any better. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I was really desperate because nothing around me, ahead of me or behind me, looked good at all. So, but this, for whatever reason, this was my point of awakening, was the meeting of this doctor. And it really was the start of my awakening. So I read the books in record time, and I didn't understand a lot of what I was reading, but I just kept pushing forward, putting book after book in front of me, putting sticky notes in all the books. I think there were more sticky notes than there were pages. So when you ask me what credentials do I have, well, that's the start of it. I spent 8 years with that doctor. He put me through all kinds of psychotherapy and acupuncture, chiropractic. He sent me to see a shaman, a past life regressionist. He did regression work. Like, that alone was a training. I went through my own healing. I got beyond a lot of my personal problems. And then from there, the doctor and I created study groups, and he and I studied many books together. We would dissect different spiritual texts from different cultures of the world. So that was another aspect of my studies. The doctor and I created workshops that he and I went out and taught. That was an amazing experience for me. Mm-hmm. Those skills I learned by doing that, I've carried forward in my life, and I've taught meditation, and I've taught men's workshops, which I traveled out west to teach, and I taught those in Ontario as well. So that's you know, something that's been definitely a skill that the doctor taught me. And from my experiences with the doctor, I started to look in a different direction, and I met the Ashaya monks. And so there was a period of my life where I became a monk. I was with the Ashaya monks for 8 years. Then eventually I took vows and became a monk.
So if anyone's wondering, like, what is an Ashaya monk and how is that different from maybe what some people are thinking of, stereotypically, we'll say?
Yeah, good question, because it comes up a lot. The Ashaya monks were just a modern day monk, and there was a teacher leading the way. And their main and really only focus is meditation. So learning how to turn inward and discover the peace inside of you.
Right.
So that was about 8 years of my life. And some of that was, I did that while I was friends with the doctor. And I took a course on Native spirituality, which was an interesting story. Maybe we'll get into that later. And after my time with the monks, decided I was going to go back to school and take psychology. So I went to Western for a couple of years, took 2 years worth of psychology and some English programs there.
So that brings us to the present. You've done a lot in your time since you're 20 years old. There's been quite a lot of that has happened in your career and all of the things that you've managed to accomplish. And that's just scratching the surface, the things that we just discussed. But beyond that, now you wrote a book called Be Love.
That's right.
Which is what this podcast series is based on. We took a deep dive into the text, and we've developed a audio experience for everyone, hopefully to learn a little bit more about awakening and inner wellness and spirituality. Now, in the beginning of the book, you state right away that it's not a casual read. And what do you mean exactly by that?
Be Love is the type of book that sets the reader down every so often. And what I mean by that is that it's a book that needs to be contemplated. There's layers of wisdom in the book. And what you'll find when you sit down and you spend a bit of time with it, that you could miss a great deal of knowledge that's packed into the paragraphs of that book. Mm-hmm. So it's not a book that you would just, it's not a story. It's not for entertainment. There's entertaining qualities and parts in the book, but it is the type of book that will stop you, and it'll bring up things in yourself.
Yeah. And the way that we've went about preparing this, this interview series is by being contemplative.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was your experience when you were reading it?
My experience with the book, so I've read it twice. So the first time I read it rather quickly, I think I sat down in four different sittings. I read for maybe 3 hours each time. My first read of the book, I did notice a little bit of a change in how I approach things, my day-to-day life, because anger, while it's gotten much tamer, it's still a thing. And the book is very careful in detailing how we can better approach these sorts of things when they become a thing.
That's
right.
And
you identify with the feeling that's going to happen, and you can diffuse these things a lot better when you have the knowledge and how to do that. And there's a lot of logic in the book to point you to things that we're tangible with in our day-to-day life all the time.
And it's about changing your relationship with your mind more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so now the second read, because we had to develop questions and figure out how exactly we're going to approach this, because it's very deep subject matter, it's easy to miss certain details unless you take a really close look at it. So the second read was very much paragraph by paragraph, and then I'm contemplating to come up with questions and things that I noticed were driving my curiosities I want to know more about. And because it's safe to assume that there will be people that listen to this that are in a very similar state as myself, as we're not sure yet what this is, that there is still a lot of questions and there's still a lot of things yet to discover with this. It's so new to me. You've lived with it for quite a long time now. And you even say to me that you're still discovering what you've written in the book, especially in the later chapters.
Well, absolutely. There were parts of the book that moved me as I read back through the chapters, and I learn from it myself. So it was definitely one of the deepest, most profound experiences I've had in my life. Mm-hmm. Was writing Be Love. There were so many deep pockets of wisdom that bubbled up from me, and I sit back and look at it, and I read parts of it, and it sits me down.
Mm-hmm.
It's really been quite an experience. It's my biggest accomplishment in my life thus far.
That's amazing, man. And it is quite an incredible thing to read, because it's not overly wordy. You also subdivide chapters into smaller pieces that it just makes it easier to understand. There's less to contemplate all at once. I feel like you guide people at a nice pace so that it's not too overwhelming, because some of the content is deep. Well, it's all very deep, but some of it also is conceptual and difficult to wrap your head around initially. And so you need to kind of take some time. As you said, as we talked about, it's not a casual read. This isn't a fiction romance tale. This is something to use as a tool and a resource to hopefully give yourself a better arsenal to deal with life. And especially if you feel that you're inherently challenged by things that, when they become difficult, you don't really know how to effectively navigate those problems.
Well, it's a book about awakening, and not my awakening. I have had my awakening, and I continue to have awakenings. And that's, so this book is more about your awakening, about reading it and then becoming empowered. It's not a book that I wanted to fill your mind up full of concepts. I don't want or need you to believe anything that I have to say. I want you to know, come to know who you are on a soul level. Mm-hmm. I want the reader to become empowered so that they're not looking towards anything other than themselves to be fit for the world.
Mm-hmm. So just to wrap this up real quick before we move on, I think it's important to state as well to the listeners that I myself am not and never really considered myself a religious thinker. I didn't grow up in that type of household. And so from face value, if I were to approach this book, it may seem like something that I may not be able to get down with. But then you realize really, really quickly that it's grounded in logic. When you read it, you bring up so many examples, like when we get into the mind here in a moment, that you read the text and then you think to yourself, that is what happens. That is real. That is what happens to me on a daily basis.
Well, because this book is written, you know, about my life. I've lived the pages of this book. It's not just a concept or an idea that I'm introducing. It's really all these things I've lived through.
So in the preface, we have to discuss a couple of things before we get into the first part, which is about the mind. And in our world today, there is quite a emphasis on positive thinking. And I think we need to demystify that a little bit. What is your take on whether positive thinking is actually important for us as people?
I think it depends on where we're at. If you're in a place where you're feeling suicidal, positive thinking is a really good thing and necessary in that moment to grab anything that will pull you out of the well. As a tool to awaken, it doesn't have enough juice to deliver us to peace. Positive thinking alone doesn't have the power to actually make a positive change in our life. What I found is that when I first started to kind of wake up and realize there's something more to life, I thought, okay, I need to be more positive. And where that stemmed from was that the Ashaya monks told me that a great deal of our thoughts, say about 80% are negative. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to repave all the roads in my mind with better, nicer thoughts. And my world's going to be good. I'm going to be okay. So I went through and I started, when I was having a bad thought, I'd replace it with a positive one. But the problem with that is that I was still stuck in my head. So it was a temporary fix. Positive thinking on its own was not something that was going to deliver me into my peace.
And that seems like something that becomes kind of laborious after time, because you're constantly having to check with your thoughts, which keeps you stuck in them. That's what you're saying, right?
That's right. By staying positive, you're still staying in the realm of your mind.
Absolutely. That's really interesting. And also, too, one thing I'd like to add to that is that when there's a positive, there's also a negative. And so if we're trying to emphasize positive thinking, but we have maybe we become tired with that action, maybe that becomes exhausting to constantly take a negative thought and transform it into a positive one, that eventually we sort of put it down because it is tiring us out. And then if you revert back to your negative thinking, that is a significant failure, as someone would perceive it as that, when they're really trying their best to be positive. Or if you're in a relationship with somebody and they're constantly reminding you about your negative attitude or you're being negative. And these sorts of things, who people who live and they're aware of their negativity and they're trying their best not to be that way, that now shines a light on the part of them that they're most uncomfortable with or even perhaps despise about themselves, which then creates more torment.
Well, and if the statistics are true on how many negative thoughts we have a day, from what I've learned is that 80% of our thoughts are negative. Now, when I was asked when I was told that, I'm a skeptic. I think that's an important thing to be on your own path, is to be skeptical. We don't want to be led down the path by anyone. You have to do your own homework. So I was told that 80% of her thoughts are negative. And I said, no way, not mine. Maybe other people are having that experience. I'm not. Mm-hmm. They said, well, the Ashayas said, okay, watch your thoughts. So I did. I had pencil and paper, and I had a positive side and a negative side. And I started charting my thoughts, and it blew my mind how many negative thoughts I was having. Somebody would walk by me, and I did this while I worked in the factory. So perfect place to practice this. Someone would walk by, and I'd think, I cheats on his wife. What a loser. Another person walked by, that guy's a drug addict. And another person walked by, I'd say, you guy's such an idiot. And I, like, these thoughts were just popping in my head, and I couldn't believe the content and the quality of the thoughts in my mind. So the mind really has a lot of negative thoughts. So to try to replace every negative thought with a positive one, you know, just leaves you stuck in your head.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a close conversation to having a positive attitude or thinking positively, but there's also a lot of emphasis on being happy. Mm-hmm. And what's your thoughts on that?
I don't think that life is about being happy. I think that happiness is something that arises in certain moments of our life. Like, I don't think we're meant to be turned on to being happy all the time. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if somebody was just walking around with a smile pasted over their face and somebody's dog gets run over? You know, to be authentic with the moment you're in, we need all the range of emotions. And it's good to have access to them. But there is an emphasis on I want to be happy. And people believe that their happiness is going to lead them to peace. But happiness is actually just an emotion. And peace is a solid and stable reality. So you can't find peace in an emotion. And that's what people are searching for. They're searching for their peace in an emotion. And they're not going to find it. They're not going to find their peace in happiness. Where your peace actually starts to arise is from living your purpose. Mm-hmm. So I don't care so much about being happy. I want to be purposeful. And happiness is a byproduct of living a purposeful life. So it's not about, you know, just walking around with being happy.
So I think it's fair to say that a lot of this book is to educate you about some of the things that are happening autonomously within you that you may not even be aware of, that is a course of habit and just not being aware of certain things that are sort of programmed into your body, like we're talking about your thoughts. Like, I've heard of things as well that 90% of the things that we do, your mind is working autonomously and we're not actually making conscious decisions. And so you got to wonder, like, is your body just on autopilot and your mind's just kind of taking over? So I think what we want to do today with this is to educate people more about the realities of what's actually happening, give them tools, give the listeners tools to better deal with some of the situations in life, some of the things that are going to come up. Like you said, finding peace is not through an emotion, like being happy all the time. There's going to be sad times in life. Now, how do we deal with that? And this is sort of a time in life where I feel, especially with some youth, have less coping skills and less tools available to them to deal with some of these traumas that can happen in our lives. So I'm really excited to get into this with you.
And I think the dialogue that's going to happen throughout this series is going to be of great value to our listeners to help them stabilize and ground a more peaceful experience with their life, and to maybe help their children ground and stabilize a more peaceful experience in their lives as well.
By the end of your life, you will have made thousands of mistakes. Those mistakes will be easier to live with than one single regret for not following your heart.